13. Donna stopped when she caught sight of us, a nest of laundry in her arms, smelling like the dusty air. Trouble, she hooted. Trouble, a word from a long-forgotten world. That lady just nabbed you, huh? She said. Man, heavy. Dark circles made crescents under her eyes, a hollow sink to her features, though these details were overshadowed by the swell of familiarity. She seemed happy enough to see me, but when I introduced Tom, she zipped a look at me. He gave me a ride, I supplied helpfully. Donna's smile teetered, and she hitched the laundry higher in her arms. Is it cool that I'm here? Tom whispered to me, as if I had any power at all. The ranch had always welcomed visitors, putting them through their jokey gauntlet of attention, and I couldn't imagine why that would have changed. Yeah, I said, turning to Donna. Right? Well, Donna said, I don't know. You should talk to Suzanne. Or Guy. Yeah. She giggled absently. She was being odd, though to me it was just the usual Donna rap. I could even feel affection for it. Some movement in the grass caught her attention. A lizard, scuttling in search of shade. Russell saw a mountain lion a few days ago, she remarked to no one in particular, widening her eyes. Wild, huh? Look who's back, Suzanne said, a flounce of anger in her greeting, like I had disappeared on a little vacation. Figured you'd forgotten how to get here. Even though she'd seen Mrs. Dutton stop me, she kept glancing at Tom, like he was the reason I'd left. Poor Tom, who wandered the grassy yard with the hesitant shuffle of museum-goers, his nose pricking from the animal smells, the backed-up outhouse. Suzanne's face was shuttered with the same distant confusion as Donna's. They could no longer conceive of a world where you could be punished. I was suddenly guilty for the nights with Tamar, the whole afternoons when I didn't even think of Suzanne. I tried to make my father's apartment sound worse than it had been, as if I'd been watched at every moment, suffered through endless punishments. Jesus, Suzanne snorted. Dragsville. The shadow of the ranch house stretched along the grass like a strange outdoor room, and we occupied this blessing of shade, a line of mosquitoes hovering in the thin afternoon light. The air crackled with a carnival sheen, the familiar bodies of the girls jostling against mine, knocking me back into myself. The quick metal flash through the trees. Guy was bumping a car through the back ranch, calls echoing and disappearing. The drowsy shape of the children, mucking around a network of shallow puddles. Someone had forgotten to turn off the hose. Helen had a blanket around herself, pulled up to her chin like a woolly ruff, and Donna kept trying to snap it away and expose the homecoming queen body underneath. The hematoma on Helen's thigh. I was aware of Tom, sitting awkwardly in the dirt, but mostly I thrilled to Suzanne's familiar shape beside me. She was talking quickly, a glaze of sweat on her face. Her dress was filthy, but her eyes were shining. Tamar and my father weren't even home yet, I realized, and how funny it was to already be at the ranch when they didn't even know I was gone. Nico was riding a tricycle that was too small for him, the bike rusted and clanging as he pedaled hard. Cute kid, Tom said. Donna and Helen laughed. Tom wasn't sure what he'd said that was funny, but he blinked like he was willing to learn. Suzanne plucked at a stalk of oak grass, sitting in an old winged chair pulled from the house. I was keeping an eye out for Russell, but didn't see him anywhere. He went to the city for a bit, Suzanne said. We both turned at the sound of screeching. It was just Donna, trying to do a handstand on the porch, the flail of her kicking feet. She'd knocked over Tom's beer, though he was the one apologizing, looking around as if he'd find a mop. "Jesus," Suzanne said. "Relax." She wiped her sweating hands on her dress, her eyes pinging a little. Speed made her stiff as a china cat. The high school girls used it to stay skinny, but I'd never done it. It seemed at odds with the droopy high I associated with the ranch. It made Suzanne harder to reach than usual, a change I didn't want to acknowledge to myself. I assumed she was just angry, her gaze never exactly focusing, stopping at the brink. We were talking like we always did, passing a joint that made Tom cough, but I was noticing other things at the same time with a slight drift of unease. The ranch was less populated than before, no strangers milling around with empty plates, asking what time dinner would be ready, shaking back their hair, and invoking the long car ride to L.A. I didn't see Caroline anywhere either. "She was weird," Suzanne said when I asked about Caroline. "Like you could see her insides through her skin. She went home. Some people came and picked her up." "Her parents?" The thought seemed ludicrous that anyone at the ranch even had parents. "It's cool," Suzanne said. "A van was heading north, I think Mendocino or something. She knew them from somewhere." I tried to picture Caroline back at her parents' house, wherever that was. I didn't push much further than those thoughts. Caroline's safe and elsewhere. Tom was clearly uncomfortable. I was sure he was used to college girls with part-time jobs and library cards and split ends. Helen and Donna and Suzanne were raw, a sour note coming off them that struck me, too, returned from 2 weeks with miraculous plumbing and proximity to Tamar's obsessive grooming, the special nylon brush she used only on her fingernails. I didn't want to notice the hesitation in Tom, the shade of a cower whenever Donna addressed him directly. "So what's new with the record?" I asked loudly, expecting the reassuring invocation of success to shore up Tom's faith. Because it was still the ranch, and everything I'd said was true, he just had to open himself to it. But Suzanne gave me a strange look, the others watching for her to set a tone. Because it hadn't gone well, that was the point of her stare. "Mitch is a fucking traitor," she said. I was too shocked to fully take in the ugly cast of Suzanne's hatred. How could Russell really not have gotten his deal? How could Mitch not have seen it on him? The aura of strange electricity, the air around him murmuring. Was it specific to this place, whatever power Russell had? But Suzanne's gaudy anger recruited me back in, too. "Mitch freaked. Who knows why? He lied. These people," Suzanne said. "These fucking dopes." "You can't fuck with Russell," Donna said, nodding along. "Saying one thing, then going back on it? Mitch doesn't know how Russell is. Russell wouldn't even have to lift a finger." Russell had slapped Helen that time like it was nothing. The uncomfortable rearranging I had to do. The mental squint in order to see things differently. "But Mitch could change his mind, right?" I asked. When I finally looked toward Tom, he wasn't paying attention, his gaze trained beyond the porch. Suzanne shrugged. "I don't know. He told Russell not to call him anymore." She let out a snort. "Fuck him. Just disappearing like he didn't make promises." I was thinking about Mitch, his desire that night, making him brutish so he didn't care when I winced, my hair caught under his arm, his fogged-over gaze that kept us indistinct, our bodies just the symbol of bodies. "But it's cool," Suzanne said, forcing a smile. It's not... She was cut off by the sudden surprise of Tom, surging to his feet. He clattered down from the porch and sprinted in the direction of the pool, shouting something I couldn't make out. His shirt coming untucked, the naked, vulnerable holler. What's his problem? Suzanne said. And I didn't know, flushing with desperate embarrassment that morphed into fear. Tom was still shouting, scrambling down the steps into the pool. The kid, he said. The boy. Nico. I flashed on the silent shape of his body in the water, his little lungs sloshing and full. The porch tilted. By the time we hurried over to the pool, Tom, already slogging the kid out of the slimy water, it was immediately clear that he was okay. Everything was fine. Nico sat down on the grass, dripping, an aggrieved look on his face, fisting at his eyes, pushing Tom away. He was crying more because of Tom than anything else, the strange man who'd yelled at him, who'd dragged him from the pool when he was just having fun.
What's the big idea?
Donna said to Tom, patting Nico on the head roughly, like a good dog. He jumped in. Tom's panic was reverberating through his whole body, his pants and shirt sopping, the wet suck of his shoes.
So?
Tom was wide-eyed, not understanding that trying to explain would make it worse. I thought he'd fallen into the pool.
But there is water in there, Helen said.
That wet stuff, Donna said, sniggering. The kid's fine, Suzanne said.
You scared him.
Glug, glug, glug.
A fit of giggling overtook Helen.
You thought he was dead or something?
He still could have drowned, Tom said, his voice going high. No one was watching him. He's too young to really swim.
Your face, Donna said. God, you're all freaked, aren't you?
The sight of Tom wringing the biological stink of pool water from his shirt. The junk in the yard catching the light. Nico got to his feet, shaking out his hair, sniffing a little with his weird, childish dignity. The girls were laughing, all of them, so Nico trundled off easily, no one noticing his departure. And I pretended I hadn't worried either, that I'd known everything was fine, because Tom seemed pathetic, his panic right on the surface with no place to retreat. And even the kid was mad at him. I was ashamed for bringing him around, for how he'd caused such a fuss. And Suzanne was staring at me, so I knew exactly what a stupid idea it had been. Tom looked at me for help, but he saw the distance in my face, the way I slid my eyes back to the ground. I just think you should be careful, Tom said. Suzanne snorted.
We should be careful.
I was a lifeguard, he said, his voice cracking. People can drown, even in shallow water. But Suzanne wasn't listening, making a face at Donna. Their shared disgust, including me, I thought. I couldn't bear it.
Relax, I said to Tom.
Tom looked wounded. This is an awful place.
You should leave then, Suzanne said. Doesn't that sound like a good idea?
The rattle of speed in her, the vacant, vicious smile. She was being meaner than she needed to be. Can I talk to you for a second? Tom said to me. Suzanne laughed.
Oh, man. Here we go.
Just for a second, he said. When I hesitated, Suzanne sighed.
Go talk to him, she said. Christ.
Tom walked away from the others, and I followed him with halting steps, as if distance could prevent contagion. I kept glancing back to the group, the girls heading to the porch. I wanted to be among them. I was furious with Tom, his silly pants, his thatchy hair.
What?
I said, impatient, my lips tight. I don't know, Tom said. I just think... He hesitated, darting a look at the house, pulling at his shirt. You can come back with me right now if you want. There's a party tonight, he said, at the International House. I could picture it. The Ritz crackers, earnest groups crammed around bowls of watery ice, talking SDS and comparing reading lists. I half shrugged, the barest shift of a shoulder. He seemed to understand this gesture for the falsehood it was. Maybe I should write down my number for you, Tom said. It's the hall phone, but you can just ask for me. I could hear the stark billow of Suzanne's laughter carrying in the air. That's okay, I said. There's no phone here anyway. They aren't nice, Tom said, catching my eyes. He looked like a rural preacher after a baptism, the wet pants clinging to his legs, his earnest stare. What do you know? I said, an alarming heat rising in my cheeks. You don't even know them. Tom made an abortive gesture with his hands. It's a trash heap, he said, sputtering. Can't you see that? He indicated the crumbling house, the tangle of overgrown vegetation, all the junked-out cars and oil drums and picnic blankets abandoned to the mold and the termites. I saw it all, but I didn't absorb anything. I'd already hardened myself to him, and there was nothing else to say. Tom's departure allowed the girls to deepen into their natures without the fracture of an outsider's gaze. No more peaceful, sleepy chatter, no balmy stretches of easy silence. Where's your special friend? Suzanne said. Your old pal. Her hollow affect, her leg jiggling even though her expression was blank. I tried to laugh like they did, but I didn't know why I got unnerved at the thought of Tom returning to Berkeley. He was right about the junk in the yard. There was more of it, and maybe Nico really could have been hurt. And what then? I noticed all of them had gotten skinnier, not just Donna. A brittle quality to their hair, a dull drain behind the eyes. When they smiled, I glimpsed the coated tongues seen on the starving. Without consciously doing so, I pinned a lot of hope on Russell's return, wanting him to weigh down the flapping corners of my thoughts. Heartbreaker, Russell catcalled when he caught sight of me. You run off all the time, he said, and it breaks our hearts when you leave us behind. I tried to convince myself, seeing the familiarity of Russell's face, that the ranch was the same, though when he hugged me I saw something smeared at his jawline. It was his sideburns. They were not stippled, like hair, but flat. I looked closer. They were drawn on, I saw, with some kind of charcoal or eyeliner. The thought disturbed me. The perverseness. The fragility of the deception. Like a boy I'd known in Petaluma, who shoplifted makeup to cover his pimples. Russell's hand worked my neck, passing along a fritter of energy. I couldn't tell if he was angry or not, and how immediately the group jolted to attention at his arrival, trooping in his wake like ragged ducklings. I tried to pull Suzanne aside, hook my arm through hers like the old days, but she just smiled, low-burning and unfocused, and shook herself loose, intent on following Russell. I learned that Russell had been harassing Mitch for the last few weeks, showing up unannounced at his house, sending Guy to knock over his trash cans, so Mitch came home to a lawn junked with flattened cereal boxes and shredded wax paper and tinfoil slick with food scraps. Mitch's caretaker had seen Russell there too, just once. Scotty told Mitch he'd seen some guy parked at the gate, just staring, and when Scotty had asked him to leave, Russell had smiled and told him he was the house's previous owner. Russell had also shown up at the recording engineer's house, trying to cadge the tapes from his session with Mitch. The man's wife was home. Later, she'd recall being irritated at the sound of the doorbell. Their newborn was asleep in the back bedroom. When she opened the door, there was Russell in his grubby Wranglers, his squinty smile. She'd heard stories of the session from her husband, so she knew who Russell was, but she wasn't afraid. Not really. He was not a frightening man when first encountered, and when she told him her husband wasn't home, Russell shrugged. "I could just grab the tapes real quick," he said, straining to look past her. "In and out, just like that." That's when she got a little uneasy, plowing her feet deeper into her old slippers, the fussing of the baby drifting down the hall. "He keeps all that at work," she said, and Russell believed her. The woman remembered she'd heard a noise in the yard later that night, a thrash in the roses. But when she looked out the window, she didn't see anything except the pebbled driveway, the stubble of the moonlit lawn. My first night back was nothing like the old nights. The old nights had been alive with a juvenile sweetness in our faces. I'd pet the dog, who'd nose around for love, give him a hearty scratch behind his ears, my coursing hand urging me into a happy rhythm. And there had been strange nights, too, when we'd all taken acid, or Russell would have to get in some drunk motorcycle guy's face, using all his flip-flop logic on him. But I had never felt scared. That night was different, by the ring of stones with the barest of fires going. No one paid any attention when the flames dissolved to nothing. Everyone's roiling energy directed at Russell, who moved like a rubber band about to snap. "This right here," Russell said. He was pacing, dinking out a quick song. "I just made it up, and it's already a hit." The guitar was out of tune, twanging flat notes. Russell didn't seem to notice, his voice rushed and frantic. "And here's another one," he said. He fussed with the tuning pegs before letting loose a jangle of strums. I tried to catch Suzanne's eye, but she was trained on Russell. "This is the future of music," he said over the din. "They think they know what's good 'cause they got songs on the radio, but that's not shit. They don't have true love in their hearts." No one seemed to notice his words unraveling around the borders. They all echoed what he said, their mouths twisting in shared feeling. Russell was a genius, that's what I'd told Tom, and I could picture how Tom's face would have moved with pity if he were there to see Russell. And it made me hate Tom, because I could hear it too. All the space in the songs for you to realize they were rough, not even rough, just bad. Sentimental treacle. The words about love as blunt as a grade schooler's. A heart drawn by a chubby hand. Sunshine and flowers and smiles. But I could not fully admit it, even then. The way Suzanne's face looked as she watched him. I wanted to be with her. I thought that loving someone acted as a kind of protective measure, like they'd understand the scale and intensity of your feelings and act accordingly. That seemed fair to me, as if fairness were a measure the universe cared anything about. There were dreams I had sometimes, and I'd wake from the tail end, assuming some image or fact to be true, carrying forward this assumption from the dream world into my waking life. And how jarring it would be to realize that I was not married, that I had not cracked the code to flight, and there would be a real sorrow. The actual moment Russell told Suzanne to go to Mitch Lewis's house and teach him a lesson, I kept thinking I had witnessed it. The black night, the cool, flicking chirps of crickets, and all those spooky oaks. But of course I hadn't. I'd read about it so much that I believed I could see it clearly. A scene in the exaggerated colors of a childhood memory. I'd been waiting in Suzanne's room at the time, irritable, desperate for her return. I tried to talk to her at multiple points that night, tugging at her arm, tracking her gaze, but she kept brushing me off. "Later," she said. And that was all it took for me to imagine her promise fulfilling itself in the darkness of her room. My chest tightened when I heard footsteps enter the room, mind swelling with the thought, Suzanne was here. But then I felt the soft, glancing hit, and my eyes flew open. It was just Donna. She'd thrown a pillow at me.
"Sleeping Beauty," she said, sniggering.
I tried to settle back into pretty repose. The sheet overheated from the nervous shuffle of my body, ears suggestible for any sound of Suzanne's return. But she didn't come to the room that night. I waited as long as I could, alert to every creak and jar, before passing into the drowsy patchwork of unwilling sleep. In fact, Suzanne had been with Russell, the heir of his trailer probably going stuffy from their fucking. Russell unraveling his plan for Mitch, he and Suzanne staring up at the ceiling. I can imagine how he got right up to the edge before swerving around the details, so maybe Suzanne would start to think she'd had the same idea, that it was hers, too.
"My little hellhound,"
he had cooed to her, his eyes pinwheeling from a mania that could be mistaken for love. It was strange to think Suzanne would be flattered in this moment, but certainly she was. His hand scratching her scalp, that same agitated pleasure men like to incite in dogs, and I can imagine how the pressure started to build, a desire to move along the larger rush.
"It should be big," Russell had said. "Something they can't ignore."
I see him twisting a lock of Suzanne's hair around a finger and pulling, the barest tug, so she wouldn't know if the throb she felt was pain or pleasure. The door he opened, urging Suzanne through. Suzanne was distracted the whole next day, going off by herself, face announcing her hurry, or having urgent, whispered conferences with Guy. I was jealous, desperate that I couldn't compete with the fraction of her that was deeded to Russell. She'd folded herself up, and I was a distant concern. I nursed my own confusion, tending, hopeful explanations, but when I smiled at her, she blinked with delayed recognition, like I was a stranger returning her forgotten pocketbook. I kept noticing a soldered look in her eyes, a grim inward turning. Later I'd understand. This was preparation. Dinner was some reheated beans that tasted of aluminum, the burned scrapings of the pot, stale chocolate cake from the bakery with a hoary pack of frost. They wanted to eat indoors, so we sat on the splintered floor, plates crooked on our laps, forcing a primitive caveman hunch. No one seemed to eat very much. Suzanne pressed a finger to the cake and watched it crumb. Their looks at one another across the room were bursting with suppressed hilarity, a surprise party conspiracy. Donna handing Suzanne a rag with a significant air. I didn't understand anything, a pitiful dislocation keeping me blind and eager. I'd steeled myself to force a talk on Suzanne, but I looked up from the nasty slop of my plate and saw she was already getting to her feet, her movements informed by information invisible to me. They were going somewhere, I realized, when I caught up to her, following the play of her flashlight beam. The lurch, the gag of desperation. Suzanne was going to leave me behind.
"Let me come too,"
I said, trying to keep up, following the swift rupture she cut through the grass.
I couldn't see Suzanne's face. "Come where?" she said, her voice even. "Wherever you're going," I said. "I know you're going somewhere." The teasing lilt.
"Russell didn't ask you to go."
"But I want to," I said. "Please?" Suzanne didn't say yes, exactly. But she slowed enough so I could match her stride. A pace new to me. Purposeful.
"You should change," Suzanne said.
I looked down, trying to discern what had offended her. My cotton shirt? My long skirt?
"Into dark clothes," she said.